Guys, I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, the curious people gather for what's called the technical MIP, which has been meeting for 32 years at this frequency at this time. And those curious amateurs get together and teach each other wireless technology. How these radios really work and how to make them work better. The first hour or so, we take check-ins for people who do have a question or a comment for the net. After that, it's followed by John, KC2WGB, who mans the mailbag. For those who don't yet, let me drop. For those who don't yet have the right equipment to talk to us directly, or if they don't have the right hamlets that they're working on, and they send their questions to John, and he'll be giving his website, and it's also listed on QSZ.com. So John, KC2WGB, does that. He also maintains the, he monitors the Echolink website and also the chat room. So if you have trouble getting your agent word-wise because you're out of the area and by one of the other techniques you're trying to get to this repeater to talk to us, and if we don't leave enough space to listen to all four beeps so that everything gets reset and those people get locked out by way of the chat room or by way of IRLP, John knows about that. Brings it to our attention. So after John goes through about two or three or so of the questions he has received over the last week that have universal applicability to what we do, the next thing is followed by, after we try to answer those questions, we go over to Paul, WS2N, who is our space report expert. He'll be giving us space report number 201 of the series, telling us the latest in what National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been doing. Let me drop it. You may have heard this week that a large number of additional exoplanets have been recognized and reported. So now the total number of planets that are observable going around other stars is up to over 3,000. And something like 21 or 25 of those planets going around those other stars, the 3,000 of them, 21 or 25 of them, I'm not sure of the number, are in the Goldilocks zone. In other words, they're not too close, not too far. They're at the right distance where water would be in liquid form, and therefore life as we know it is rather likely, particularly if you've read anything about the so-called Stanley Miller experiment, or the Miller-Urey experiment, as it's called, done way back in the early 50s. Where he took inert, inorganic materials, put them into a flask, passed a spark through it, did that for a week, and out came a whole bunch of amino acids. Organic material was starting to form the basic building blocks of life. So there's a significant amount of evidence that life as we know it is spontaneous. If the planet that life is trying to form itself on, if that planet has the right conditions. Okay, I believe there's a chance that Joe wants to give us a message, W2BMP, and so I'll give him an opportunity to do that at this time. W2BMP, if you're there, Joe, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you so very much, Dick. You must have read my mind. I just wanted to remind everybody that Limark is aggressively pursuing jamming or interference, malicious interference. And if any malicious interference occurs tonight, please just go to www.limark.org, and there's an RFI report on the main page. Just click that and let us know what you heard, especially on the input. Again, we're very aggressively pushing this, and we're being pretty successful at it, so we appreciate everybody reporting no matter where you are, what you heard, what time you heard it, and if you heard it on the input, so much the better. Thank you very much, Dick. Whiskey 2 Bravo, my papa. Have a great evening, everybody. 73.
Okay, the man you just heard was the president of Limark, and with a very good message, which is starting to give results. At this time, we're going to take check-ins from people who do have a question or a comment. You're going to give me your call letters, your name, and followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 32 years, we believe somebody's listening. It's been, call letters a name right now and try to remember to listen for the four beeps in between each of the transmissions. K2RIW listening.
WHYY, Joe, yes.
Very fine, we got Joe. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name right now. One more call. Anybody with a question or a comment for the net? And bear in mind, there's no such thing as a dumb question. That's our philosophy. We on the TechNet believe that the dumb question is the one that's most deserving of the answer, because that's the one that shows the biggest difference, displays the biggest difference between what the person knows and what he would like to know. So we don't ridicule people for so-called dumb questions. Give me a call, letters, if you got any question at all right now. K2RIW on the TechNet.
This is Chief.
I'm not sure if you're trying to get to us on a handy talkie. Maybe you have to go to a different location. That transmission was 90% noise, 10% audio. I heard KC2, and that's about all I heard. Want to try it again? KC2 blank blank blank. With call letters and name. K2RIW the TechNet.
Okay, this is Kilo Bravo 2, Mike Alpha Romeo. I'm just curious, what frequency the Weimark members will be using while at Hamvention to communicate with one another. Is it a simplex frequency or a certain repeater? Just a small, maybe you can throw it out to the net and a very quick question you can answer me. Over to you, Dick. This is KB2MAR.
Okay, KB2MAR, that's Gabe. So you guys who are going to be walking around the huge flea market, if you want to call it that, at Gayton this coming weekend, what simplex frequencies are you guys likely to be using? If anyone has chosen simplex frequencies, and maybe you don't want to announce it over the air for whatever reason, maybe you want to pass it among the guys who have got your call letters and so on. So if anyone has any information on the simplex frequencies they use on the handy talkies or walking around the flea market at Dayton, Ohio, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW the TechNet. Looks like we don't have an answer right now, Gabe, but we're going to repeat your call for information about people communicating at Dayton. We'll repeat that a little bit later on in the net. Why don't you nominate a frequency, Gabe? What's your favorite frequency to operate your handy talkie on when you're operating handy at a flea market? And is it 2 meters or 450 or both? KB2MAR, K2RIW.
Well, the frequency I would recommend would be 146.535, of course, FM. If you choose 146.52, it would be too much interference. But I figure 146.535 would be a good choice.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. The frequencies around 146.5 are quite often used for simplex. What I have done with my family when I go to places like that, I go way outside of the normal frequencies just to make sure I'm not being jammed by anybody nearby. I use a 146 146.100 or 146 or 100 is a sideband calling frequency. 146.300, for instance. So it doesn't have to be. I said 146. How about 144? 144.300, 144.400. By going that far away from the crowd, you're sort of guaranteed to have your own private frequency. So right now, Gabe's suggestion is what?
Don't go down that low.
Tell me about that, Eric. KE2EJ. K2IW. What happens if you go down that low? Handy talkies will go there. Go ahead, Eric.
Around Dayton, there's a lot digital stuff. 145, 144.3, 144.2. There's a lot of backbone stuff floating around there. Throughout Dayton, pretty hard. Most of us hang out on really traffic because there's a lot of clear frequencies. 146.5, 253.5, 555. Those are all like, if you want to hear a lot of noise, that's where you'll be. The amount of RF that's floating around the place kind of defense most radios anyway. But there's a couple of repeaters that we use. I don't offhand remember what the frequencies are. I'm waiting for Bernie to get in touch with the folks, which she generally does every year, and we ask their permission, and then we hang out there.
This is KP2, ma'am. Repeat your frequency and if you want to copy them down.
Okay, sounds like Gabe. I hope you're in a better location.
Repeater, time out.
Sounds like Gabe has already selected a number of frequencies. Maybe Gabe is telling us he knows the frequencies of the local repeaters. So go ahead with that information, Gabe. KP2MAR, K2LIW on the TechNet.
Okay, I have my little notebook here. I'm writing information, but I'll be with you in 1 second. Maybe you can kick it around a little bit more in the meantime, and I'll find the 123. This is KP2MAR.
Very fine, Gabe. And I didn't wait for the beeps. Eric, sounds like you believe that the 144 region, the 145 region has a lot of digital stuff in Dayton. 146 is going to be booked pretty solid. Is there any help in going to 147? 147 simplex frequency for talking on the local, man-to-man on the grounds there itself. And one other question, Gabe. I mean, here we go. Eric, Glenn Eiffel has been absent from all of the PBS programming for the last 3 weeks. Is she possibly going through a medical condition? Over to you, Eric, K2EJ, K2LIW.
I'm sorry, Dick. I can't answer that question. I haven't been paying too much attention to what's going on programming wise. I really have no idea, but I'll find that for you.
Sounds good. What about 147 megs? You're afraid that would be wall-to-wall also?
I gotta understand something. Between Dayton and Columbus and I forget which town south, the hands are very active, and there's literally repeated on most frequencies. Talking frequencies, of course, is 146.4. There's a couple of 147 repeaters. There really is a lot of activity. And everybody and his brother, while they're at Dayton, tries to find something that's blank. And so it's kind of wall to wall. A lot of noise and chatter. That's why some folks hang out at 446 even, 446.1, something like that. But us guys from Limark, or our small little group, rather, we use a repeater, which is little known, little used, so, I mean, used a lot, but suppose if I go through my radio, I can find the frequency, but I wait for Bernie to give us the okay, because it's someone else's private machine, and, when we come in, it's like, where did all these New Yorkers come from? It's RIW case again.
Yeah, one of the things that I feel like mentioning to you guys is that an extremely popular set of radios these days are the Baofeng and Wuxong radios. They're $20, $30, and $40, and they cover 2 meters, 440, very wide frequency regions. Also can be tuned to listen to FM broadcast on 88 to 108 megacycles in the listening mode. So the radio goes DC to light, and it's inexpensive. That's the good news. The bad news is it has an extremely wide open front end and a tissue paper front end. Another transmitter come on the air a mile away, a megacycle away. That radio comes out of squelch and starts giving all kinds of random noise. So the handy talkie you use at Dayton I recommend, if at all possible, you use something of a little bit known higher, what's called intercept point. In other words, unjammability, a higher quality handy-talky than the Luxons. The Luxons will work, but you're going to hear an awful lot of noise on there, which is off-frequency because it has no front-end selectivity. You might have some opinions on all of this, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Balfong's are basically useless there. Speaking of jammers, they have some jammer issues, and for the past couple of years, a couple of guys from the FCC punk themselves there. So if you're going to use a Balfong and go outside the handband, I recommend you don't, because some bad things usually happen when that happens. So, I give you a well, again, let me see if Bernie got in touch with them. If he did, then I'll give you what the frequency is. But, you know, if you're looking for Limark, folks, that will probably, later on in the week, when Bernie gets the okay, he'll let other folks know what frequency it is.
W2BMP with a question, Joe?
Go ahead, Joe.
No, it's in the normal chain of command, so when you're finished, I think you had a question before mine. This is on antennas, so when you get a chance, I'd like to ask a question.
You're on the list. I've been standing up 2 or 3 feet from my radio. Make sure I'm not too close to it, Eric. Your voice tells me you're recovering from a cold, and I want to make sure I don't get it, but you sound like you're well on the recovery. That's just a pure guess on my part. Guessing on your voice quality today. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Yeah, I started out with really severe bronchitis, I think, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago. And I got rid of that, and then all of a sudden I came down with a viral hug. I'm at the end of it, but it seems to be lingering. So, you're pretty right.
Yeah, I wasn't telling you to get closer. I'm just telling you that I was putting a distance in my ring to make sure I don't get any of the germs you're putting over the air. Obviously, that's a joke. Okay, the first person with a real question is Joe, and he's doing a lot of research on all of the excess noise on each of the handbands, VHF, UHF handbands. Since he's got a one of these things called an injection bug. Bug is the thing that's the slang that people use for this device. You put in the transmission line so you can inject a calibrated amplitude signal and measure the real sensitivity of your receiver under real working conditions when it's connected to the real antenna. And when Joe did that, he came up with a 28 dB of less sensitivity when connected to his antenna than when connected to a signal generator. And by driving around with his automobile, he found that there's some significant sources of noise on the air. And so I wonder how that research is going, Joe. The B2LYY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
I also have an observation and comments about that after we finish.
You're on the list, right after Joe. But on that subject, you got it, Joe.
Good evening, Dick. Good evening, TechNet. Well, my service line doesn't go portable right now. I have some complications with that, so I can't use that in the vehicle. But I can use my R7000. Now, if that's set to a wide mode, and I use the generator in the house to pretty much calibrate the S-meter, or just note what the S-meter what it equals. S9, this is the radio in wide mode at 29.5 megahertz. S9 is minus 87 dBm, plus 10 over S9 is minus 80 I got, plus 20 is minus 72, plus 30 is minus 64. So you sort of know what those numbers are, right? I took the R7000 in the vehicle and went to a suspected point, and I did find it, I guess, pretty close to it, less than a quarter mile away from my house, northeast of me. And when I use this R7000 on 2 different frequency bands, 29.5, and also around 50.1, I can find peaks of noise as high as 20 to 25 dB over S9. so that's a fairly considerable, you know, level. My question to you tonight, Dick, is this. How much are power line companies allowed to radiate as far as noise? I know there's probably a rating of like microvolts per meter at a certain distance away. Could you elaborate on that and convert that apparent answer to that question into something in dBm using a resonant antenna? Back to you.
What signal strength in noise power, dBm per megacycle, that's the units. It's not just dBm, it's dBm per megacycle. When you're looking at broadband noise, how broad is the receiver is a big determining factor as to how much noise in microvolts the receiver receives. You can see that phenomenon when you look at the baseline noise on a spectrum analyzer, and you adjust the spectrum analyzer for either 1 megahertz of resolution bandwidth, that really means value of bandwidth, or say for instance 10 kilohertz, you'll see the noise power change considerably in power as you go to broader bandwidth. You're receiving more noise, and you'll get more peak to valley ratio of the noise, and the noise band becomes wider as well as stronger when you go to wider bandwidth. So you've heard me say often, one of the beginning calibration factors you're looking for, which I know you already know, is that 1 microvolt is a very nice number to use as a reference. A real good handy talkie will have a sensitivity of around 0.5 microvolt. A real good base station rig, quite often better than 0.25 microvolt. But 1 microvolt is just a nice round number, which is minus 107 dBm. Now to convert from dBm or microvolts received on a known antenna into microvolts per meter, a field flux density, I guess it's called. Let me drop. For me to do that conversion, I'm going to have to do a little bit of mathematics, Joe, in between some of these conversations. I guess I can give you some of the raw ingredients as to what I'm going to use. Once you know the signal strength in microvolts per meter, and you assume that signal strength is being expressed across 377 ohms. That's what the impedance free space is, 377 ohms. So by the power law of E squared, power equals E squared over R, and R is 377, and E is the volt you're talking about, as long as you're using it in volts and ohms, the power comes out in watts. You have to convert that to milliwatts, and then convert that to dBm. So, whenever somebody gives you some number of microvolts per meter, square that number in microvolts, divide it by 377 ohms, that's the power in watts, and with a little bit more conversions, they'll eventually get that into a dBm. So that's the path. That's give you some of the information you're looking at, and as I said, I'll work out some of the mathematics in between now and then. But S9 noise level, wow. That, as you drive around your neighborhood, that kind of signal strength is really potent. Let me drop. I suspect from what you're saying, Joe, that you believe the local power company, or at least the local power line, the high voltage transmission lines, as well as maybe some of the distribution lines in your neighborhood, seem to be arcing and sparking. And as such, when you listen in the AM mode on your R7000 broadband receiver, you will hear a 60-cycle or 120-cycle component if it is power line arcing, because the arcing almost always occurs at peak voltage, and you get a positive peak and a negative peak, two of them per cycle. 60-cycle line is going to give you 120. It's got a very characteristic sound. So that'll help you say that, yes, it appears to be power line noise, although that could be a false alarm. Somebody in your neighborhood might have an arcing front doorbell transformer in his basement that's arcing over and making noise. Or maybe somebody's got a fish tank heater. These are some of the things that really do it. continuously, you know, many hours of the day. And so the noise that you hear, I'm getting the impression from everything you've told us after a couple of weeks of these measurements. Let me drop.
I don't know why somebody on cellular is keying up while you're talking. I know what they're trying to do.
I get the impression from what you're saying, Joe, that this noise is not of an intermittent nature. It's probably of a continuous nature. In other words, you can listen to it morning, noon, and night, and you hear it roughly the same power level. So back to you, Joe. You're doing some darn good research, and I'm a little bit afraid there's not going to be a grammar fix on this, but at least, and by the way, the main question you asked is, how many microvolts per meter is your local power company allowed to radiate? That I don't know. And maybe somebody else on frequency can tell us that. So WA2RYY, with some delay, K2RYW, detect that.
They got to be within part 15.
Okay. Part 15 is signal strength in dBm per microvolt. And do you happen to know what that number of dBm per microvolt is? But dBm per microvolt, when it's broadband noise, it's now going to be dBm per microvolt per megahertz. And I'm not sure that those numbers are published in that form, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'm hearing some other stuff here. The exact numbers I don't have right off the bat, but I'll look it up in a minute. And it's, I think it's in, I think it's in DBU, but I'm not sure. There's a certain amount of energy and a certain amount of distance. And one of the things that I've noticed recently is that in the town of Oyster Bay, especially if you're doing HF, you hear a lot of signals that seem to have hum on it. What it is, these stupid LED lights, power supplies, putting out all this garbage, and it's a lot stronger than what part 15 says. Give me a couple of minutes and I'll give you the exact values. K2RIW, K2J.
Yeah, you just brought up a very good point, Eric. Andy, WA2CDL, had some light-emitting diode ceiling lights in his shack, in his work area, that he soon discovered were making tremendous amounts of noise. And he had to go from brand A to brand B. He had to rip out that particular brand because the noise was so excessive. I think it was beyond the point where you just add bypass capacitors and ferrite beads and things like that. So you brought up a very good point, and that is there are certain brands of light-emitting diodes that are really potent in the noise they put out.
It's not the diodes, it's the power supply.
Agreed, but the light-emitting diode system with its power supply can really be wicked. And so if somebody has decided that, hey, these light-emitting diodes are super efficient, and we're going to use them across our whole parking lot of the shopping center. Boy, could that be a source of noise. And when Joe decides to drive his vehicle in that area, he might get a real eye-opening. So we're going to turn it over to Joe while Eric is looking for his further information. W2RYY. I can tell that this is not going to be a simple one, Joe. W2RYY, K2RIW.
K2QIQ.
You keep on mentioning shopping center. The nearest shopping center is a mile and a quarter from my house, and it's not coming there. I already taken a receiver up there. It's not coming there. It's coming from a junction of what appears to be 69 KB lines, where one is joining another, like another set. I don't know if it's teeing off there or what they're doing with the thing, but I get the noise north of me and east of me off my television antenna. And again, it's the strongest, like I said, about northwest 040 degrees. And I drove in that direction, took the with the mobile, and I, at this particular junction, I get the maximum amount of noise where I'm receiving this energy in FM wide at 20 to 25 dB over S9. Not an S9. It's stronger than S9. Much stronger.
Wow. You should also listen in the AM mode, because FM wide is a very good mode for measuring signal strength, but the AM mode also, what comes out of the loudspeaker, will give you a few more clues. There's certain kinds of impulse noise that in FM wide, the limiter will completely take it out and you don't get a chance to hear it. Whereas in the AM mode, listening to that noise and its characteristics might give you another clue. Let's see what Glenn's got to say. And Glenn, I wonder if you've ever seen any excess noise in your neighborhood in Massapequa, or KC2, QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, good evening, Dick, and everybody on the TechNet. Just wanted to mention the levels for FCC Class A, which are pretty much what most of the power companies stay to, is the conducted emissions are typically from about 1 megahertz on up. In the 1 to 30 megahertz area region, have to be below 30 dB microvolts in FCC Class B. For industrial Class A, it's usually 10 dB higher, so it's usually around 40 dB microvolts there. That's in the conducted region up to 30 meg. As far as the radiated emissions go, those numbers, I believe, are 50 dB microvolts, and that's relatively measured inside a chamber, but I'm not sure about the distance on that, because that's usually done with gain in antennas, but probably it's pretty safe to assume that a meter from the source, you shouldn't be measuring anything more than, you know, say 50 dB microvolts. KC2 QIQ, back to you there.
WYQU.
WY2U, K2RIW. Awful glad you signed in, sir. And Professor Mike, tell us what you know about ratings and so on for microvolts per meter at some distance and so on, our companies. You've got a mic.
Hey, good evening, Dick, and good to hear Glenn on, by the way. I'll say hello to you and also there, Glenn. Yeah, how you doing, guys? I got the Class A and Class B standards on the computer right in front of me right now. And by the way, I have a clarification on something you had mentioned before, but I'll give you the limits first. Let's talk only radiated, since obviously that's what Joe is interested in. And I think he did measurements in the 30 to 88 megahertz region, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere is around 30 megahertz and somewhere is around 50. The standards are 10 meters away from a non-intentional radiating emitter, which of course a power line should be, in the range 30 to 88 megahertz, no more than 39 dB microvolts per meter. And this is at 30 feet, 10 meters away. And roughly the same level, that's for Class A equipment, and roughly the same level for Class B equipment. Actually, it's 1 dB higher, but it's on the order of 39 or 40 dB microvolts per meter 30 feet away. Go ahead.
Now, I see a little bit of a problem with that system of units, Mike. If it was a coherent signal, like what comes out of a signal generator, dB microvolts per meter makes sense. When you're looking at broadband noise, depending on what bandwidth I use, I'm going to get a different amount of noise. So I might get 30 dB microvolts per meter at 39 dB microvolts per meter with a 10 kilohertz wide filter. With a 1 megacycle wide filter, I'd see 20 dB more noise. So because noise is a number of microvolts when observed with a certain resolution bandwidth or noise equivalent bandwidth, there's another system of units here. Do you believe, what system of units for bandwidth do you think is used during these measurements, Mike? WY2U, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that. I believe, and I'm looking now up and down this rather lengthy PDF file, I believe it's 10 kilohertz. So they're talking about a notch, a spot bandwidth of 10 kilohertz anywhere from 30 megahertz to 88 megahertz. I believe that's the number. It could be 5 kilohertz, but for some particular reason, Dick, I think it's 10. Go ahead.
KC2QIQ.
Very fine, Mike. Let's see what Glenn's got to say about this. You got it, Glenn.
Yeah, most of the EMI labs that I've seen usually measured in a 9 megahertz bandwidth resolution, and they usually use a quasi-peak detector, and those are like the typical measurements. Back to you, Dick, KC2QIQ.
I think it's 9 kilohertz, but that could be the video bandwidth.
Yeah, give us a repeat on that, Glenn. You said 9 megahertz. Did you mean 9 kilohertz? Because if I go from 9 kilohertz to 9 megahertz, and I'm measuring broadband noise, I'm going to see 30 decibels more noise, 1,000 times more noise power with a 9 meg filter as opposed to a 9 kilohertz filter. So repeat that one for us, Glenn, as to what bandwidth. KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
It's 9 kilo, Dick. Kilohertz. It's 9 kilohertz bandwidth resolution is typical measurement mode with quasi-peak detection. And there's usually two limits. They usually give an average and quasi-peak. And there again, those are about 10 dB apart as well. So they allow you basically to be within the peak limit and usually 10 dB below for quasi-peak detection.
Now, 39 dB with reference to a microvolt strikes me as a relatively potent signal. And when Joe is listening with his wideband, FM wideband mode of his R7000 receiver, because FM broadcast, wide FM broadcast, is a plus or minus 150 kilohertz, or it's plus or minus 75, but I think each channel is roughly 200 kilohertz wide, so most likely the FM detector with a 10.9 meg IF is probably in the vicinity of 200 kilohertz wide. Therefore, the noise power you're going to see is quite a bit more potent than you would see with a 9 kilohertz. But that's calibratable. If I, you and I can easily figure out how many dB more noise power I see at 200 kilohertz of IF bandwidth as opposed to 9 kilohertz. Let me round that off to 10 kilohertz. 10 versus 200 is a 20 to raise ratio. That's 13 dB. So you'd see 13 or so dB more noise with FM wide as opposed to a 9 kilohertz bandwidth, which seems to be the standard. I wonder if that makes a little bit of sense, Joe. That'd be 2RYY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, it does. I guess the other gentleman come on here with the information for Class A. What exactly would I look up on the internet to find out that information, like, basically printed out? Because if I go to talk to the power company, I want to talk, at least have some information that's going to sound like I know what I'm talking about to them, because they're going to be, you know, initially give me a runaround, you know, to try to get them to deal with something like this.
Yeah, that information came from Mike, so WY2U, make sure you wait for the four beeps. I didn't do that. So where is that website, Mike? You got a mic?
Okay, Joe, it's Part 15 Regulations FCC for digital equipment. Class A and Class B refers to digital equipment. What they're, I guess, assuming is that the power companies nowadays are using a whole bunch of supervisory control equipment, in addition to all of the switching noises and whatnot that come out of all of the mechanical apparatus they use for generating electricity. It seems like the digital stuff generates a lot more racket. So it's Part 15 FCC regulations for Class A and Class B equipment. And the reason why, by the way, real quick, I got two comments, Dick. I'll give you the first one right now, then I'll drop, and I'll give you the second one. The reason why they use 9 kilohertz, it sounds like a very odd way to do bandwidth measurements, because somebody might say, why not use 10 and make it easier on yourself? Well, it turns out, just about all the spectrum analyzers, and I think they standardized to the FCC, not the FCC, excuse me, the Hewlett-Packard equipment, is that when you program in a 9 kilohertz digital filter for IF resolution, because of the shape factor of the filter, it actually has about 1.2 dB more noise than it would have had if the filter had a flat response. Therefore, it's the same as a 10 kilohertz equivalent bandwidth. So if anybody was wondering why the strange unit of 9 kilohertz comes out, it's because of that. WY2U back to net, and I got another comment.
Just to throw in a couple more words on what Mike was just saying. You and I measuring a IF filter would even measure its bandwidth at the point that it's 3 dB down, 6 dB down, 60 dB down. In fact, a real good filter with steep skirts has a particular small ratio between the 6 dB bandwidth and the 60 dB bandwidth. So 3 dB bandwidth is the usual definition of the bandwidth of a filter, half power bandwidth. Full double-sided half power bandwidth is the way it's sometimes called. However, you're measuring that by a swept signal generator, you know, some kind of a calibrated power detector, so you're doing a real S21 measurement, forward power transfer characteristic, and you're doing that with a coherent signal. When you do it with noise power, you'll get a slightly different number. It's called noise equivalent bandwidth as opposed to coherent signal bandwidth, and they differ by a little bit, but that's minor calibration. I mean, if what Joe is measuring was a dB wrong, he wouldn't be complaining. He's measuring something that looks to him like it's a 20 some odd, like 28 dB wrong. I know you've got a second point you want to make, Joe. I mean, here we go, Mike. WI2U, Professor Mike, KQRIW, and I think you're a professor at Hofstra, so I remember. Go ahead, Mike.
No, sir, I'm actually a retired electronic engineer, but I am an adjunct over at Queensboro Community College, and I've been doing that in the evening since about 1981. And since I retired from my electronic day job in 2009, I've been working as an adjunct in the days, teaching just one course, and I'm at Queensboro Community College. But the thing I wanted to make was an equation that you had just talked about, I think when you had first signed on with Joe, converting field strength to power. And I think there's a correction that you need to apply there, Dick. You said if you take the field strength in microvolts per meter and square it and divide by the impedance of free space, you actually come out with a unit of watts. Well, the unit is not watts. What you get is power density when you do that equation. Volts per meter squared divided by Z0 impedance of free space is not watts, but watts per square meter. If you want to then convert to meters, watts, you need to know the capture area of the receiving antenna, which of course, as you know, is G lambda square over 4 pi. And that'll give you true watts, which you then can convert to dBm. So it's a little more involved than I think what you said, because you need to get the units first in watts per square meter, power density, then multiply by capture area, and then you get watts, Dick, if you understand what I'm saying. So back to net, WI2U.
Good point. And so, when it comes to microvolts per meter into power in watts per square meter, what I said still has a degree of truthfulness to it. In other words, you take the microvolts per meter, if somebody told you what it was, square it, divide by 377, that comes out in units of watts per square meter. Now, every antenna that you and I are going to use has a certain amount of capture area. It's almost never going to be a square meter. Quite often it's going to be a bigger or smaller number, depending on what band you're on. And so if you know the gain of your antenna, and even if you don't know it exactly, approximation will get you into the ballpark. Let me drop this. So one formula you should use quite often is gain equals 4 pi A over lambda squared. Gain of an antenna in isotropic units is 4 pi A over lambda squared. And you're allowed to rearrange those things so that using your laws of algebra, area is gain lambda squared over 4 pi, if I got it right. Wait a minute. Yeah. Area is gain lambda squared over 4 pi. So if you know the gain and you can multiply it by lambda squared divided by 4 pi, you now know the units of effective capture area of your antenna. By the way, you've got to use gain over isotropic, not gain of a dipole. And that comes out in square meters if you've done things just right. And that's the way you want it to be, because the microvolts per meter, when you square that and divide by 377, that is giving you watts per square meter. So if, let me give you an example. If your particular number of microvolts, point squared divided by 377, which is watts. Multiply it by 1,000 to get it into milliwatts. And now and take 10 times the log of that if you want it to be dBm. Once, if you know, for instance, that your particular antenna has an effective capture area of half a square meter, whereas the units of microvolts per meter gave you power in watts per square meter, you know that your half meter is going to be a 3 dB difference. You're going to measure 3 dB less power than you would calculate from what I just told you. So this ratio, as you can tell, very similar to what happens when you're doing moon bounds. You calculate what's the beam width of your antenna. The moon subtends half a degree, and if your antenna had, let's say, a 10 degree beam width, and the moon is only half a degree horizontally and vertically, you can tell that only a small percentage of your power is really going to hit the moon. And that gives you a hint as to why moonbound signals are darn weak. So you might want to add some more words to what I just said. That'll probably clarify it some more, Mike. WY2U, glad to hear from you. KTRIW in the Tech Net.
I think what you said there, Dick, was 100% fine. I guess my only question of Joe probably would be, let's talk about the 29.5 megahertz measurement that he made, which was a mobile type of measurement, I think he said. If he was using some kind of a mobile monopole antenna, maybe Joe, if I could just ask him real quick, Joe, what was the antenna type that you were using? Was it a quarter wave monopole or an equivalent antenna to a quarter wave monopole over a ground plane? Joe, if I could ask you, go ahead.
It's a loaded antenna. It's a base loaded antenna with the antenna rod cut for about 29. I think it resonates best at 29 megahertz, maybe a little higher than that. It covers like 29.6 and covers lower than that, but it's very close in resonance to a 29.5. It's a base loaded antenna used on a mag mount. And I did take the other antenna, the alternate antenna, the one cut for 52 megahertz or so, and transpose it. When I'm making a measurement on one particular frequency, it drops down significantly. So using the wrong frequency antenna has a substantial effect. So I did see it correctly, measuring the frequency with each antenna in each frequency spectrum I was looking at, fairly close to where the antenna is cut for resonance. Maybe on 6 meters, I'm looking at a little lower frequency, but I saw the noise also higher at 52, 52.5, 53, but I see a peak about the best is like 50, 50.5 to 51. The antenna wasn't quite cut exactly there, but I guess I still got some pretty strong readings on the R7000 when I made these measurements in the mobile.
Thanks, David. Peter Zebra with the quickie answers, Dick.
Now, it turns out, Joe, assuming your quarter wave ground plane is in the vicinity of 1 or 2 dB over isotropic, and on your automobile, it's probably in that neighborhood, and you go and multiply gain lambda squared over 4 pi, you come out with something a little bit shy of 10 square meters, the effective capture, if I didn't make a math error. So with your antenna, when you're down at a frequency as low as 28 megacycles, 10 meters, and you square 10 meters divided by 4 pi, you come out with a pretty big number, 8 or 10 square meters. As such, you're going to be hearing some pretty strong signals that you have to literally lower their signal strength in order to convert it back into microvolts per meter. But before I go over to Hal.
Repeater, timeout.
Before I go over to Hal, I wonder if that makes some sense to you, Joe. W2RYY, K2RYW in the Tech Net.
I guess in the discussion, Melissa, I'm trying to find out a realistic answer of what I would be seeing or be expected to see as far as the maximum amount of noise using a certain bandwidth, because that's what I guess I'm really getting at, you know. So when I call the power company and tell them I'm hearing this interference at this location, I want to, talk, at least it sounds, like something like I made a decent try at, making the right kind of measurements and analysis of what's going on.
Yeah, we haven't given you a nice, simple, straightforward answer on this one yet, Joe. We've given you some of the ingredients by which it can be calculated. So you now know the approximate effective capture area of your receiving antenna. It's in the vicinity of 10 square meters. I'm going to double check that if I haven't made a math error. That's making the signal you measure a lot stronger than the units that they have to be rated in, microvolts per meter. If a microvolts per meter is some number, and you're using an antenna that's not 1 square meter, but 10 square meters, you're going to be measuring a hell of a lot more power. That's one factor. The other factor is whether or not you use the FM wide, which is around 200 kilohertz wide. Again, you're going to measure a very strong signal. So of the 28 dB of excess noise you've measured so far, two of those factors are there. However, I am guessing when you measure the sensor, let me drop this. When you measure the sensitivity of your ham radio receiver, it probably had something like a 15 kc bandwidth. So that's where you were making the real measurement, signal generator versus noise power received on a real outside antenna. You're still measuring a lot of noise. There are two ways about it. But as you can see, you've got to put all these ingredients together to come up with a number to find out, is your power company 30 feet away, 10 meters away, the Part 15 spec, are they exceeding it by 1 dB or 25 dB is what we're really trying to find out here. There is a difference between rape and murder, if you know what I mean. Let's see what Hal's got to say. K6DPZ, K2RIW, see if you can simplify all this jazz.
RW, check that station, CBC. Well, I just turned the radio on. Answer on the question. Because it takes up a lot of time on. We have Empire devices and standard equipment to do RFI measurements and equipment for checking our radiation, you know, that's the same thing Con Ed uses for finding the noise. So then I'm going to just sit back. Hope we're getting okay. K6DPZ running a half a gallon mobile.
Yeah, Joe doesn't have access to standard equipment. He was using a service monitor when he was doing some of these measurements at home. He was also using the injection bug device, going from a calibrated signal generator into his receiver directly, his ham radio receiver, then when connecting his ham radio receiver to his outside 28.5 megahertz 10 meter antenna, and by injecting with the bug, the calibrated bug, he found out that he had to put in 28 dB more signal strength to the bug to hit receiver sensitivity as opposed to going straight in with a signal generator. 28 dB more sensitivity when connected to his outside antenna. And so he went driving around the neighborhood and he found out there were certain places where there's a lot of noise in his neighborhood. And so he knows the places where Loco seems to be putting out an awful lot of noise. And now by way of Part 15, we know something about what noise power they're allowed to put out. He's eventually going to boil this all down to are they meeting spec in noise power out of their power lines, or are they 28 dB above that? In which case, once he boils this all down, he's going to make a report to them. I suspect you're not going to be making that report in the next week. It's going to take you at least another week to iron out all these details, Joe. You might have some further questions. I'm going to do a little bit of the mathematics for you between now and the next time I send you an email to V2RYY, V2RIW, and TechNet.
Just real quick, I'd like to know what bandwidth was his receiver, Dick, WY2U.
That was a normal ham radio FM receiver. I'll bet you it was in the vicinity of 15 kilohertz. Is that approximately the number, Joe? Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Dick, that measurement was done into a Motorola Maxtrack radio. One at 29.5, one another at 452.55. And that I did at my house. I didn't do that with the mobile, set up in the mobile. I can't run the generator in the mobile. I'd like to do that same kind of test, in an environment like coming close to the power line noise. I might see this ratio go even higher, but I don't have the means to run the service monitor right now into the vehicle. I got to come up with an idea how to do that. It won't run off the DC cord I have for it right now. Anyway, that's why I use something else like the R7000. You keep on mentioning AM. I did receive an AM, but I don't think the thing has a bandwidth of 200 kilohertz in AM mode. I think the wide narrow switch in the back only changes your FM receive mode, not your AM. But I got similar readings in AM also, and I could actually hear what sound like 120 cycle component buzz in the speaker of this noise content I'm listening to. So I did listen to the AM too.
Yeah, the R7000 is in the vicinity of 200 KC in FM wide. I'm guessing it's in the vicinity of 15 or 20 KC in FM narrow. I'm guessing that in the AM mode, it's probably very similar, 15 or so kilohertz wide in the AM mode. So my guess is you did see some change in the signal strength meter when you went from FM wide to either FM narrow or AM. My guess is the S meter went down to a slightly lower number. If you happen to remember, is that what you saw, Joe, for B2RYY, K2RIW?
Maybe one or two or three S units at the most. But as I said, when it's on top of this noise, it's getting a reading of 20 to 25 dB over S9. And in AM, it didn't go down very far. Below that. That's why I put the signal generator in on at least FM wide to calibrate my meter. Not calibrate, but at least take a reading of what S9 is, 10, 20, and 30 over S9. So I had an idea of how many of what kind of RF level I was seeing with the generator going into the receiver. And I did write those down. I think I told you before about what those are. It seemed to be fairly high, 20, 25 dB over S9. So like, I think I got a reading of like, took about minus 64 dBm or so at the minus 25 or something like that when they write down here. S9 was minus 87 dBm. This is measured in FM wide. Plus 10 was minus 80. Plus 20 was minus 72. Plus 30 was minus 64 dBm in the antenna jack.
Yeah, that's a lot of steam, noise power wide. You said only went down by 2 or 3 S units. If it was a calibrated decimeter, I know it's not. 2 or 3 S units, where each S unit is 6 dB, half voltage. 2 or 3 S units, we're talking about a 10 to 1 voltage ratio here, 20 dB like numbers, if it was calibrated. You've got your own method of calibrating the S meter, and very few receivers have an S meter that meets the requirement of 6 dB per S unit and so on. But you've already done that calibration of your S meter. Okay, from what I can tell, Joe, you're making progress. It's not an easy thing you're doing. Very few amateurs are equipped to do what you're doing. Very few have got the enthusiasm, the equipment, understand enough of the technology. There's a lot of individual components between what noise power and dBm per megahertz of bandwidth is being emitted. Let me drop. How far you are away from the source of that signal, and if the signal is a broadband radiator like a power line, which is a line radiator, not a point source radiator, and when you're at right angles to a line radiator, the signal doesn't fall off by inverse square law, it falls off by inverse linear law. So you got a lot of funny variables going on here as far as the signal being transmitted by the power line, we think, the distance you are from the power line, what's the effective capture area of your antenna, what's the bandwidth of your receiver that receives that noise power, converting that into microvolts, converting that into microvolts per meter, and so on. There's a number of conversions required here. And so even when you think you've got a number, we ought to all review it a couple of times to make sure that we've dotted all the I's, if you know what I mean, before we fill the beans and go to the power company. Because if we make a complaint that they're 20 dB above specification and we've made a math error, they're not going to listen to us very much in the future. So we got to be a little bit careful with that. Good stuff, Joe. Keep up the good work. The next person on our list was KB2MAR. He wanted to know if anybody has a suggested frequency that they're going to be using on the handy talkies when they're at the